Hello, this is Atah Durakan with the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, June 2nd, 2026, coming to you from my home studio. We start on the front page, the bright side. Good rhythms at Rock Springs. Bands play on during the concert summer series. It's articles by Donette Beckett, Decatur. Mike and Karen Reynolds are fans of the Macon County Conservation District's free summer concert series. We like the music they play, Mike said. No heavy metal. And being outside, his wife added. The Dalton City couple have been known to tailgate in the Rock Springs Conservation Area parking lot with their Decatur friends Sandy and Roger Lake. The talented musicians have been a draw for the fans. And we live down the road, Sandy Lake said. The Macon County Conservation District's free summer concert series are held at 7 p.m. on the second and fourth Sundays of the month near the pavilions at Rock Springs Conservation Area. The last concert will be on August 9th. Dusty James and Abalone Pearl were the first act of the season. Although this year was their first performance in Decatur, the folk duo have been performing in Midwestern venues for more than 10 years. But we started playing when we were kids, James said. We started playing in the coffee houses. We couldn't get into any of the bars, so we went to coffee houses and played, Pearl said. As musicians in the 1960s, James and Pearl watched the rise and fall and rise of folk music. It's getting that way again, Pearl said. It goes up and down. According to Ashton Dukeman, marketing specialist for the Macon County Conservation District, the concerts have been part of the summer activities for 9 years. Each year, we notice quite a few more people, she said about the crowds. It's really nice to watch it grow as the years go on. Members of the audience should bring bug spray, a blanket or lawn chairs, snacks, or even a meal. We have people bring a whole pizza out with them, Dukeman said. People bring out their supper and just hang out and listen to some good music. The bands include folk bands, Americana, bluegrass, and even Celtic. We try to keep it something everyone can enjoy, Dukeman said. It's a little bit of a mix of everything. James and Pearl describe their style of music as traditional. What we're doing here is, although we plug them in, is acoustic music, James said. Wooden guitars and instruments, at one time, were probably homemade. The duo played a few original songs, but most of the music was familiar with the crowd. Bob Dylan, Kris Kristofferson, John Prine, things that are popular, Pearl said. Then they'll listen to the rest. The audience for the first summer concert series ranged in ages, and this is taken from the side of the audience, grassy area, lots of lawn chairs, people looking toward the right of the photo, toward the stage, which is not shown, seated in their chairs, and in the background, lots of beautiful trees and a pavilion. Donette Beckett, Herald and Review, photo credit. Two more large color photos. This one's taken from behind the stage truck. The Macon County Conservation District hosted their first summer concert series on Sunday, May 31st, at the Rock Springs Conservation Area. And this is neat because it's taken from behind the guitar and banjo cases, and the banjo case is open. So we're seeing the inside front cover, and to the left on the truck is one of the bands playing and we're seeing the crowd view. Donette Beckett photos, Herald and Review. And finally, folk duo Dusty James and Abalone Pearl were the first act of the 2026 Summer Concert Series season, hosted by the Macon County Conservation District. And so this one is taken from the front. So this is the front view of the photo I just described. And they are playing, and both have their guitars and playing. And a little sidebar here. It's in a light blue circle. The bright side highlights uplifting moments across our community. Visit our website for more and share your ideas. The bright side, where good news lives. Illinois $56 billion budget okayed at deadline. New taxes set for social media companies, crypto and fantasy sports. Articles by Ben Selinsky, Capital News, Illinois, Springfield. Illinois lawmakers approved the state budget early Monday morning after slogging through the night enacting new taxes on businesses and authorizing less spending than Governor J.B. Pritzker proposed in February. It's allowed us to be prepared for the great reality we face today, Senate Democratic leader, budget leader L.G. Sims of Chicago said during debate. The reality of federal cuts. The reality of chaos coming from Washington. We are not placing blame. We are prepared. We are not acting on fear. We are acting responsibly. The budget totals $55.9 billion, supported by a similar amount of revenue. The spending plan included a $830 million supplemental current year spending plan, meaning the upcoming fiscal year 2027 budget is essentially flat. To get it across the finish line, Democrats, especially progressives, had to temper their expectations. Many had called for new progressive revenue measures throughout the season, including taxes on big corporations and billionaires, and for Illinois to unite itself from parts, or I'm sorry, untie itself from parts of the federal tax code. Instead, the measure freezes corporate net operating loss and taxes, social media companies, digital assets, fantasy sports, tobacco, and sports betting on prediction market websites. Democrats also sought to include at least a few measures that address affordability. It freezes the 1.3-cent gas tax increase that's slated for July 1st, pushing it to January. It also creates a sales tax holiday on school supplies from August 7 through 16. Republicans, meanwhile, said the relief didn't go nearly far enough. We're not going to raise the gas tax in July. We're just going to wait a couple more months so we can raise it at the end of the year after election time, Representative Joe Sosnowski, Republican Rockford, said, adding sarcastically that there was a lot of courage coming out of the side of the aisle and the governor. Path to passage. Its passage comes after a spring session thrust further into unpredictability by the war in Iran and federal policy changes. Budget analysts for the General Assembly and the Governor's Office tempered revenue expectations just weeks ago, citing growing pessimism over the economy. The 3,700-page spending plan and associated implementation were introduced late Saturday evening, and about 200 additional pages were added around 2 a.m. Monday. But other components of the budget, including the capital and revenue bills, were not filed until mid-afternoon on Saturday. 13 million people expect us to do our jobs in the openness of daylight within the months and weeks leading up to a May 31st deadline each year, not in the final few hours of darkness, Senator Chris Balkama, Republican Shanahan, said as the Senate took up the spending bill around 2:30 a.m., It's highly embarrassing to the 13 million people. No Republicans voted for the plan, though some House lawmakers said they were at least more involved in budget negotiations than in past years. It's been very recent communication, but it's certainly better than no communication at all, which has been, of course, the status quo for many years, Representative Ryan Spain, Republican Peoria, told reporters. The spending measure, House Bill 111, passed the Senate 37-21 after 3 a.m. Monday morning. The House followed around 4:15 a.m. with a 76-39 vote, followed by the Budget Implementation Bill, House Bill 2949. The Revenue and Tax Changes, Senate Bill 3019, passed the House around 11:15 p.m. on a 73-41 vote, followed by the Senate around 12:30 a.m. with only Democratic votes as well. Tax increases and revenue measures. The budget also calls for transferring $150 million in sales tax revenue from gas to the General Revenue Fund once public transportation is fully funded, opening that revenue up to be spent on any purpose. If you're a driver who is irritated by the high price of gas that you're paying, You should be extra irritated by where the funds are going, Spain said. Senator Chapin Rose, Republican Mahomet, aired similar concerns earlier on Sunday during committee. We ought to be suspending the sales tax on motor fuel right now, not diverting it to the general revenue fund, and not diverting it, oddly, to the exact same dollar amount that we got for illegal immigrants and welcoming centers, he said. That state plans to spend $143 million on a health care program for undocumented immigrant seniors and another $4 million on welcoming centers that provide services to immigrants arriving in Illinois. Lawmakers incorporated a pair of the tax changes that Pritzker had proposed in February. One will lower the cap on corporate net operating loss deductions for businesses. Another will impose a tax on social media companies based on the number of users the platform has in Illinois. Combined, those are expected to generate $500 million in new revenue. Social media companies will be taxed on a progressive scale, starting with platforms with 100,000 to 499,999 users, paying 10 cents per month for each user, all the way up to platforms with at least 1 million users paying a $165,000 fee plus 50 cents for each user each month. A similar tax in Chicago is already tied up in court. New taxes on digital asset sales and fantasy sports are expected to generate $65 million. The state will create a licensing structure for fantasy sports operators and impose a 15% tax on each business, something Representative Curtis Tarver, Democrat, Chicago, said the industry themselves requested. Consumers purchasing tires will also see a 50-cent increase on a tax on those purchases, which primarily funds a waste disposal fund. Sports bets on prediction markets and remote tobacco retailers will also be taxed under the plan. This state is addicted to spending money it doesn't have, Representative Blaine Wilhauer, Republican Beecher City. It's addicted to creating programs that it can't afford. It's addicted to making promises it can't keep, and it's addicted to coming back to the taxpayers constantly to clean up the mess. The revenue package also creates a targeted advertising services tax, which is more commonly known as a digital ad tax. However, lawmakers expect the tax will also face legal challenges and are not planning to gather revenue from it in fiscal year 27. Tarver said the goal was to create a framework to implement the tax later if it's held up in court. Keith Statz, president of the Illinois Taxpayers Federation, told a House committee the tax likely violates federal internet freedom laws. The budget package does not eliminate tax incentives for data centers, despite Pritzker calling for it in his budget. Other spending in the budget appears to rely on numerous fund sweeps that redirect money from one program to another or to the state's general revenue fund. One of those sweeps includes transferring $70 million from the Bridge program, created last year to allow Pritzker to allocate funding to programs that fall short in funding because of federal cuts to the Fund for Illinois Future for infrastructure projects and other grants. Money in that fund is typically earmarked for specific projects in Democratic legislative districts. However, the spending bill stipulates that $70 million from the Bridge Fund should go to a new program to fill gaps in food assistance programs, which led to some confusion among lawmakers debating the bill in the House. Spending. Representative Robin Gable, Democrat, Evanston, said the budget includes about $65 million in reductions for government operations, a relatively small cut in the budget. She said no government staff would be laid off. Most important in this moment, this budget is not balanced on the backs of working families, Gable said. That means no taxes on working people and no severe cuts on critical services they depend on. The budget establishes a program to help people who have lost Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, benefits as the federal government institutes new restrictions on eligibility. Under the new Families Receiving Emergency Support for Hunger or FRESH program, people who have lost or seen their SNAP benefits reduced will be eligible for a one-time $400 payment. The program is scheduled to last just 1 year and is estimated to cost around $70 million. Following Wilhauer's address, Representative Diane Blair Sherlock, Democrat Villa Park, pointed a finger at the federal government. "I will not be lectured about excessive state spending at a time when I am watching billion-dollar ballrooms being built, private jets being flown around by staff to go to their girlfriends' concerts, while SNAP benefits are cut, while Medicaid is cut, while Medicare is cut, while people are desperately trying to get health care," she said. "We as a state are trying to fill in the gaps created by the federal government. Funding for local governments will increase. Lawmakers allowed the percentage of the income tax that they receive to stay flat, or 6.47%, because of natural income tax growth. Their total dollar amount received will grow." Pritzker had proposed reducing the percentage. Mayors vigorously lobbied lawmakers this spring not to cut the percentage, and Sims told reporters on Sunday morning that senators agreed. Illinois lawmakers are also in line for a roughly 3% pay raise, which will bring their base salaries to $101,450. State law indexes their pay each year to the rate of inflation. The bill also fully funds pensions and the state's evidence-based funding model for K-12 education, including a property tax relief component. However, districts receiving those grants will need to forego property tax increases for 3 years rather than two, as current law requires. Higher education will only receive a 1% increase next year. The second year in a row, new funding was below the rate of inflation. Direct service providers will receive a 60-cent wage increase, half of what is recommended. The budget also does not include any increase to the rainy day fund. On the local page, A2, Bears stadium push falls short. House adjourns with a vote after Senate advances revised plan. This article is by Brendan Moore and Ben Selzinski, Capital News, Illinois, Springfield. Despite a Hail Mary heave from the Illinois Senate in the final hours of the spring legislative session, state lawmakers ultimately failed to reach the end zone on a bill incentivizing the Chicago Bears to build a new stadium in Illinois. The Senate voted to approve the amended measure 37-17 with bipartisan support around 3:30 a.m. Monday morning after working through the night. Acknowledging the late hour, Senator Bill Cunningham, Democrat, Chicago, the bill's sponsor, said just before the vote that some of the best, most memorable victories have been in double or triple overtime. But across the rotunda, nearly an hour later, the House adjourned without taking up the Senate proposal. House Speaker Emmanuel Chris Welch, Democrat, Hillside, told members that there's a lot of work still ahead of us. "We'll continue discussions on a number of issues, including our approach to the Bears Stadium question this summer," Welch said. In a brief interview with Capital News Illinois after the House adjourned, Welch said he believes the legislature will tackle the stadium question sooner than later, but not in a special session. He also defended the decision not to move forward with a vote on the hastily crafted bill. "I think our caucus is used to processes," Welch said. "Our caucus is used to taking our time and doing it right." But in a statement released minutes later, the Bears said they have no plans to adjust their timeline for deciding on a future home. The team has a standing offer from Indiana to move across the state line to Hammond. "We will finalize our evaluation of both Arlington Heights and Hammond and remain on the late spring, early summer timeline that we have previously communicated," the team said in a statement. "We will provide an update when we have a decision to share." Senate's game plan, a day removed from delivering the bombshell that a mega projects bill designed to keep the Bears in Chicago or in Illinois was dead. Cunningham relayed essentially an offer of tax certainty to the team, but utilizing a different method than the payment in lieu of taxes. "I think it's a pretty good one," the Chicago Democrat told reporters late Sunday night as lawmakers barreled towards the end of their spring legislative session. "I think it aligns with their goals. And they may not take it, but that's up to them." Instead of a negotiated pilot, P-I-L-O-T, all in caps, on private development, the plan called for allowing municipalities to set up stadium authorities that could own and finance professional sports stadiums, since the facility would be owned by the public authority. The Bears would escape paying property taxes altogether. I think what we've done here with this bill today is establish a framework that would enable the Bears to build a stadium in the state of Illinois, Cunningham said. The bill would enable Cook County municipalities with populations greater than 70,000 to create local stadium authorities that could own and finance professional sports stadiums. While not Bear-specific, the legislation would likely have set the team up to make a stadium deal with either Chicago or Arlington Heights, a level playing field city lawmakers sought. However, the municipal stadium authority would have the power to issue revenue bonds to fund stadium construction that can be funded through local tax revenue and local, state, and federal financial assistance, along with private contributions. And the land surrounding the stadium, expected to be part of a mixed-use stadium district, would not be subject to the property tax exemption. But it would be eligible for a STAR, that's capital STAR, bond district designation. This would allow stadium district project costs to be reimbursed using bond proceeds backed by future state sales tax revenue generated by the development. The Bears have said they are only focused on a privately owned stadium in Arlington Heights or a publicly owned stadium site near Wolf Lake in Hammond, Indiana. And after months of Illinois lawmakers touting the mega projects approach versus stadium deals of the past, Cunningham acknowledges that the bill is the exact same mechanic set up in Northwest Indiana. Tax certainty. The Bears have long said they need tax certainty to move forward with a stadium project in Illinois. For the past 3 years, the team pushed for a mega projects bill that would have allowed them to negotiate a lower property tax payment for up to 40 years. The mega projects tool, which would have been available for large developments across the state, had Pritzker's backing and passed the House last month. But it did not have enough support in the Senate, with legislators expressing concerns about the impact of local property tax revenue and wary of incentivizing the Bears' exit from the city. Well, let me put it this way. I had a senator say to me that approach further breaks an already broken property tax system, and I think that senator expressed a notion that many senators held, Cunningham said. The public ownership structure here provides a clear public benefit, and I think that's why senators are more likely to support this than the other approach. The team's decision. The deal in Indiana calls for more than $1 billion in public subsidies to build a publicly owned stadium. The Bears would keep all revenue generated by the building and have the option to buy it for $1 once the bonds are paid off. The Bears have committed $2 billion to stadium construction in Arlington Heights and Hammond, but have pledged to finance an Illinois project privately. Pritzker and state lawmakers have long ruled out direct public subsidies for stadium construction. But in the Senate's bill, Cunningham acknowledged that if they choose to, they can use that authority to raise taxes. I would just point out that given what the Bears have told us, that shouldn't be necessary here, he said. The Bears have said that they will finance the stadium, so if an authority does decide to do this, I would imagine that they would take the Bears up on that offer. But without action from the state lawmakers, the Bears now move forward toward a decision without the property tax certainty they sought in Illinois. Here's an interesting opinion column. Mothers Need a Revival of the 1990s Summer by Abby McCloskey. For most moms I know, summer is a mixed bag. It's not hard to understand why. For mothers without access to flexible or remote work, summer break is associated with a significant drop in earnings and work hours. This tightens already tight family budgets and adds to the gender pay gap because fathers don't tend to reduce work hours in the summer. Then here's the financial and administrative obligation of patching together camps that cost hundreds of dollars per week per child. Some of my girlfriends have color-coded Excel files to keep all the camps and activities straight, if only. Because I normally miss the first hour of sign-up in the depth of January, my boys are the ones stuck in line dancing and weaving classes instead of hit camps like Lego building or zoology, carting around unhappy campers in 100-degree weather and squeezing work into a shorter window is not exactly being poolside with a marg. Then there's the learning loss. Studies find that students backslide by around 20% over the summer, and more in lower-income families. So for those of us who can, summer comes with the supplemental workbooks, reading lists, and activity kits, mommy school, as we call it. No wonder most mothers feel a swell of panic come May. No wonder year-round school is gaining attention. And many public schools now offer some type of summer programming. But while most discussions around summer break tend to be about how to fix summer, it can be defended. And it is not just the longer, sunnier days. Time use survey suggests summer break provides a much-needed respite for mothers in particular. According to a study in the Journal of Economic Behavior and Organization, when school is in session, mothers of 6 to 11-year-old children lose 35 minutes of sleep, lose roughly the same amount of free time, and spend an additional 52 minutes a day caring for others each day. Over the course of a week, that adds up to a whole waking day that, presto changeo, returns to American mothers in the summer. Dads also gain some extra time, but only a third as much, and parents of 12 to 17-year-olds see much smaller changes. According to time use data from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, in the summer, moms travel, exercise, and volunteer more. They spend more time eating and drinking, caregiving for children, usually during the rush hours of 6:30 to 7:30 a.m. and 3 to 5 p.m. goes way down. Instead, mothers are more likely to be doing other activities in the home while children occupy themselves. Children similarly benefit from the summer schedule when surveys show that they have more free time, getting more exercise and sleep longer. And here I thought that stacking camps and activities into summer break would give me a break. It turns out that those 1990 summers when every minute wasn't scheduled weren't so bad. Growing up, summer vacation felt much less intense. To be sure, a major difference was that my mother was a stay-at-home mom, but though she'd take us to the library, the neighborhood pool, or out on errands, most of my summer memories are unsupervised, with large chunks spent in front of the television or out with friends, and it was glorious. Which is why this year I'm bringing the 1990s summer break back. No jigsaw puzzle of camp schedules. The kids have access to a landline phone and their bikes. I'm going to attempt to work while kids occupy themselves. I know that I'm lucky for the flexibility to be able to work this way. Many parents can't. What we once took for granted, slow summers, is now another luxury. Summer will still come with its share of struggles. But for those of us who are able to this summer, let's try a looser schedule. Fewer rushed mornings and the more unstructured time spent outside. McCloskey is a Bloomberg columnist, podcast host, and consultant who directed economic policy at the American Enterprise Institute. And with that, we have come to the end of the first half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, June 2nd, 2026. We'll take a short break and return with the second half hour.